take my son on a playdate. Then leave. You don't think I've tried? She looked away, shaking her head. The first time, I went back home. I stayed at my mama's 3 days away from him. 3 days of freedom. Do you know what he did? She glared at Angie. He dragged me out of my mother's house by my hair. He near about beat the life out of me. He locked me in a box, and he kept me in his garage, and you know what the cops told my mama when she called? Telling them that her daughter had been kidnapped by a madman? Domestic problem. That's all I am. A domestic problem. Angie wasn't surprised. The small-town cops who had arrested Joe with those prescriptions were probably the same cops who looked the other way on her abduction. If you were willing to take one payoff, then it was just a matter of time before you took another. There is a wall of money backstopping these men. They don't lose things. They don't lose their wives. They don't lose their children, she told Angie. I tried in California. I tried in Chicago. Each time Reuben came and dragged me back, he used my mama against me. He used Anthony. Joe's tone changed at her son's name. My birth mother abandoned me. I know how that feels. I'm not going to do that to my child. Angie felt her stomach clench. Do you know anything about her? Does it matter? Joe asked. I can't run to her for help, if that's what you're asking. She's probably dead by now. Even back then, she was a prostitute, a junkie. Exactly the kind of trash you'd expect to give up a baby. Angie took a deep breath. I'm not going to leave my boy. If Reuben was Father of the Year, I still wouldn't leave Anthony. That kind of damage, it rots your soul. Angie had to get away from the subject. What was your plan when you showed Marcus the video? What did you think you'd get out of him? Money. Protection. She slowly exhaled. Without the video, I've got nothing. It doesn't matter. It's what you've seen. It's your ability to open your mouth. Nobody cares what I have to say. You know too much, Angie told her. As far as Kip and Marcus are concerned, your mouth is a loaded gun. Joe took a deep breath, just like Angie had. So, here I am again, trapped right back where I started. Angie couldn't abide the resignation in her voice. I've got a plan to buy you some time, get you away from your husband. What are you going to do? Joe's mouth twisted into a scowl. You think you can take on Reuben Figueroa? Shit, you'll get a gun in your face. That man doesn't back down, and he does not give up control. She counted down on her fingers. I'm not on the bank accounts. I'm not on the investments. I'm not on the pensions. I'm not on the house. I don't own my car. I signed a prenup before we got married. She laughed, this time at herself. I was in love, baby. I didn't want money. I willingly signed myself into slavery. I can get you out, Angie said. I can keep you safe. She had thought through some of this already. Dale's trust fund for Delilah. Angie was authorized to pay for an apartment and living expenses. She could use the money for Joe instead. I can get an alias for you. I'll help you hide out. Once you're safe, I'll find a lawyer who can negotiate with Reuben. How are you going to get me out? Joe asked. That's the hard part. You might as well be saying to me that you're going to hide me out on Mars, and we'll figure out how to fly me there later. She was right. Reuben would be waiting for Joe outside the jail. He wouldn't let her out of his sight until she left for rehab. If he let her leave for rehab. You don't get it, do you? Joe seemed genuinely perplexed. Reuben doesn't care about basketball. He doesn't care about Anthony. He doesn't really care about me. He wants control. She closed the space between her and Angie. I'll do whatever that man wants. Anything, you feel me? He just says the word. Snaps his fingers. And he still holds a knife to my face. He still wraps his hand around my throat. He can't get off unless I'm terrified. Angie couldn't think about all the ways her daughter had been shamed. Tell me something. What's it going to be like when Anthony gets older? How are you going to protect him? Reuben wouldn't hurt his son. Angie wondered if she could hear herself. He's going to see how his daddy treats you. He's going to grow into that same kind of man. No, she insisted. He's sweet. He's got nothing of his daddy in him. Wasn't Reuben sweet when you first met him? Jo pressed her lips together. She looked down at her hands. Angie thought she was going to come up with another excuse, but she said, What's your plan?
You'll bail out Saturday. I know Reuben will be waiting for you outside the jail. So will the photographers. I'll make sure of that. You can go with me instead.
That's your plan? She looked more dejected than before. Step two of that is Reuben either pulls out his gun and shoots me in the head, or I get a call from his lawyer saying I'm a junkie with a record and I'm never going to see my son again. She laughed. And he still shoots me in the head. She was right, but Joe had spent years trying to think of a way out. Angie had spent 2 days.
What about when you go to the party on Sunday?
Joe started to shake her head, but then she stopped. Anthony will stay with my mother. She's the only one Reuben allows to keep him.
Angie asked, Can you get away from Reuben at the party? Go to the bathroom or something?
He'll be with the guys. With Marcus, she explained. That's when they made the video. It was that girl, the one who charged Marcus with rape.
Keisha Miscavige?
Yes. She wiped her eyes. She couldn't wipe away the fear. You should know what you're up against. What they do to women who don't matter. That girl was drugged. I know they put something in her drink. An hour later, she's in that bedroom, arms flopping around, out of her mind, telling them no. And they just laughed while they took turns with her. Angie knew what a gang rape looked like. She wasn't shocked by the details.
Sunday night, as soon as you're on your own, slip out of the house. Go down the driveway, take a left. There's a turnoff for an alleyway that the gardeners use. I'll be parked there waiting for you.
Joe didn't answer. This was happening too fast.
Why? I told you about my daughter.
Joe shook her head, but she was still desperate enough to listen to a complete stranger. I meet you at this turnoff. Then what?
Angie said, I'll go to your mother's and pick up Anthony.
She talked over Joe's protest. That's the first place they'll look for you. I can handle them better than you can. Why not get Anthony first, then meet me at the party? Angie could tell she needed something to push her over the line, to make her take that first step. What happens if you don't get away and I've got your kid in my car? How do I explain that? How do you explain it?
Joe looked down at the floor. Her eyes tracked back and forth. She chewed her lip.
Angie recognized the signs of negotiation. Joe's escape from the party would set the plan in motion. That was the point at which there would be no turning back. If she didn't slip away, if she changed her mind at the last minute, then Anthony would stay at her mother's, and Joe would take a beat down and everything would go back to normal.
Joe asked, What am I supposed to do while you're kidnapping my son?
I'll rent a car under an alias. She'd have to get Delilah's driver's license, but that shouldn't take more than a dime of heroin. Sunday night, I'll leave the car parked down the street from the Rippies. Once you leave the party, I'll drive you to the car. You go to the one-town motel and wait for me. I'll go to your mother's and pick up Anthony. Once I bring him to the motel, you jump on the interstate and drive the car west. I'll stay here,
and make sure your tracks are covered. And then what?
We find a lawyer to negotiate with Kip to get you out of this mess.
She stopped Joe before she could throw up obstacles.
Remember that you can testify that you saw Marcus in that video, too.
Testify? She turned skitterish again.
I'm not going to. It won't come to that. All that matters is the threat.
Joe pressed her lips together again.
Why should I trust you?
Who else are you going to trust?
Angie waited for an answer that she knew would never come.
What do I gain from tricking you?
I'm trying to figure that out.
Joe picked the gold chain around her neck. I thought Reuben sent you to fetch me.
That's what he usually does, but he doesn't let the fetcher take care of me.
He does that himself.
Who does he send to fetch you?
A man, she said.
Always a man.
Angie gave her time to think.
Do you want money?
Joe asked.
That's what you get out of this, a piece of whatever I get from Reuben?
Would it make you feel better if I asked for something?
I don't know.
She was still thinking about it, trying to find the holes.
My mother can't travel. She has a heart condition. She can't be far from the hospital.
Look at me. Angie waited until her eyes were locked with her daughter's. The same brown irises. The same almond shape. The same skin tone. The same hair. The same voice, even. She told the girl,
If I was your mother, I would tell you to take Anthony and leave and never look back.
Joe swallowed. Her perfect neck. Her straight shoulders. Her anger. Her fear.
Okay. She agreed. I'll do it.
Saturday, 4:39 a.m. Angie yawned as she drove down Ponce de Leon Road. The dying moonlight made everything look chalky white. She was exhausted, but she couldn't sleep. Joe's arrest 2 days ago was still all over the news. The predicted press scrum had gathered around the jail, waiting for her release later today. Kip had warned Reuben to stay in line. Rehab had been arranged for Monday. Marcus had held a press conference last night where he talked about how Joe and Reuben's marriage was strong, that they would get through this, that they just needed people to keep them in their thoughts and prayers. A blurred photo of Joe with her head down, sitting on the floor during one of Figueroa's games, was the only image anyone could find of her. She was safe for now. That's what Angie kept telling herself. Joe just needed to be safe for another day and a half. From the outside, it seemed like Joe had a good chance of escaping. The plan didn't feel complicated. There were just a lot of moving pieces. Angie had spent the last 2 days doing her part, stealing Delilah's ID, renting the car, driving the escape routes back and forth, buying a used iPad out of the back of a van, smashing it with a hammer, delivering the pieces to Dale, acting like she was fine so that he didn't get too close or too curious. As always, money was the hard part. Angie had $30,000 in her checking account, but she couldn't use it to help Joe, at least not if Dale was still alive. He could access her account. There could not be any recent, hefty withdrawals. Angie's only option was to peel off some of the cash Dale kept in the trunk of his car and hope that he didn't notice. He'd always kept payoff money under his spare tire, especially when his bookies were chasing him down. Angie would take the cash tomorrow, right before the party. She wouldn't be greedy. Joe didn't need to stay in five-star hotels while she made her escape. For a few grand, she could drive out west and find a dirtbag motel with HBO to keep the kid occupied. Stealing Delilah's identity had been comparatively easy. Angie had cased out a convenience store down from where Delilah was living. She knew the girl would show up eventually. Staying off H was hard, even with the Suboxone. It made you fidgety. It made you hungry. Angie had paid a kid to hang around the store. When Delilah had finally shown up, he picked her wallet out of her purse.
He'd snatched her driver's license, cloned one of her credit cards, and was gone before Delilah got to the cash register. Angie had been in the store when it happened, hiding behind a Coke display. A risky move, but she couldn't stop herself. She had always been fascinated by Delilah. At least, as fascinated as you could be about someone you despised. What made her so special? It had to be more than blood. Dale had other family he barely gave a shit about. So what made him protect Delilah all those years? Make it his dying wish that she was taken care of. It had to be more than pussy. Dale could buy that off anybody. Angie had to admit that the girl wasn't bad-looking, if you were into cheap and trashy. She'd managed to put on some weight. She no longer looked like a skeleton. She'd stopped coloring her hair. Apparently, she still wasn't washing it. Even standing 15 feet away, Angie could see that the brown was more of an oily black. The split ends tapped at her shoulders as she loaded her purchases onto the counter. 40 of malt liquor, 2 bags of Cheetos, a can of Pringles, Snickers bar, Skittles. She asked for 2 packs of Camels because watching her father die from type 2 diabetes and kidney failure was not the cautionary tale you'd expect it to be. Delilah never looked at consequences. She didn't even look at next week. What mattered was today, right now, what she could get her hands on, who she could exploit, and how she was going to make money off of it. Did she know about Dale's trust fund? Angie wasn't sure, but she knew that Dale would have a failsafe. Someone else would know about the trust. Someone else would make sure that the girl knew Angie was holding. There was only one other person Dale trusted, and Angie hoped like hell she never found herself face to face with that vicious motherfucker ever again. Angie stopped for a red light. She yawned again. She rubbed her face. Her skin felt rubbery. Not enough Vicodin. She was trying to taper off for tomorrow night. The next few hours would be excruciating, but her mind had to be sharp. She went over the plan again, trying to see the holes, trying to anticipate the snags before they happened. The iPad was the key. It was inside Angie's private eye bag, locked in the trunk of her car. The thing felt radioactive. It was also an open question. Joe had said that Reuben's laptop had been wiped clean. Joe's iPhone had been remotely erased, too. Did that mean the iPad would be erased if Angie turned on the power? The technology eluded her. The value did not. She hadn't told Joe about the iPad because she didn't trust Joe. She recognized the girl's equivocation in the grocery store. Joe had only agreed to Angie's plan because she saw that there would be a last-minute way to stop it. Don't leave Reuben at the party. What would Joe decide? Another open question. Angie wasn't sure her daughter would leave. And even if she left, would she stay gone? Joe had left Reuben before, 5 times before that Kip Kilpatrick knew of. Angie felt the truth gnawing at her gut. Even if Joe left, she would go back to Reuben, as sure as Angie was sitting in her car. The only way to stop that from happening was to make certain that there was no Reuben to go back to. Will worked at the GBI. They had computer people. If there was a video on the iPad, he'd find a way to access it. He would throw Marcus and Reuben in jail, and Joe could work with a lawyer to break the prenup. Or not break it. Reuben's career would be finished. His life would be over. Joe could disappear. She could take her monthly draw from Delilah's account and go back to college, meet a nice guy, have another kid. Angie laughed out loud. The sound echoed in her car. Who was she kidding? Joe didn't like nice guys any more than Angie did. There was a reason Angie couldn't live with her husband. She wasn't even sure she was going to live past tomorrow. Dale Harding had blood on his hands. Laszlo had killed before. Kip didn't mind pulling the trigger from behind the safety of his big glass desk. If any of them found out Angie had helped Joe, then there was no amount of running that would get her away. Maybe that was why she wanted to see Will one last time.
Or, even if she couldn't see him, see his things. Touch his clean, starched shirts hanging in the closet. Mix up his perfectly matched socks in the drawer. Put his toothpaste in the wrong hole in the porcelain holder. Carve an A in his soap, so the next time he showered, he touched his body and he thought of her. Angie downshifted the gear into first. She had almost driven by Will's house. She pulled over to the curb, parking across the street, in front of a fire hydrant. Will lived in a bungalow that used to be a crack house and was probably worth $500,000 by now, if only for the land. The inside was meticulously restored, decorated entirely in neutrals. His desk was pushed up against a wall in the living room. A pinball machine took pride of place in the dining room. The spare room was full of all the books he had read with his painstaking slowness, determined to get through the classics because he thought that's what normal people did. In the summer, he mowed the lawn every other weekend. He cleaned the gutters twice a year. Every 5 years, he painted the trim around the windows. He pressure washed the decks and porches. He planted flowers in the little garden outside the front door. He was a regular suburban dad, except that he didn't live in the suburbs and he didn't have a kid. At least, not as far as he knew. The driveway was empty as usual. Will spent most of his free time at Sarah's. Angie couldn't get past the security system in Sarah's building without spending some serious money. But she had found old photos of the apartment archived on a real estate site. Chef's kitchen, 2 bedrooms, an office, master bath with soaking tub and a shower with 10 body jets. Apparently, she liked to keep the body jets to herself. I took a page from Mama's book, Sarah had written 3 weeks ago. I had the painters tackle the guest bathroom while we were at work. I changed out the towels to match. Will was so pleased to have his own bathroom in my apartment, but honestly, I was going to kill him if I had to keep sharing. Angie wondered if Will was stupid enough to fall for the trick. She assumed he was. He fell for a lot of Sarah's crap. He probably had a t-shirt that said, "Happy Wife, Happy Life." She smiled because the only way Sarah could marry Will was if she pried him away from Angie's cold, dead hands. If, for that reason alone, Angie would survive tomorrow. She checked for curious neighbors before walking around the side of the house. With any other owner, the back gate would squeak, but Will kept everything well oiled. Angie found the spare key over the doorframe. She slipped it into the lock. She opened the door and found 2 greyhounds staring back at her. They were curled into a sleepy pile. They blinked in the faint light, looking more surprised than scared. Angie wasn't afraid. The dogs knew her. "Come on," she whispered, clicking her tongue. "Good boys," she coaxed, petting them as they stood and stretched. She held open the door. They went outside. Betty barked. Will's dog was standing in the kitchen doorway, protecting her territory. Angie scooped up the mutt with one hand, clamped her mouth shut with the other, and tossed her outside. She had the door closed before Betty could get her bearings. The little asshole tried to get back in through the dog door, but Angie blocked it with her foot until she could put a chair in front of it. Betty barked again. Then there was silence. Angie looked around the kitchen. Dogs meant people. Will and Sarah were here. They must have walked from her apartment. They walked all the time, even in the summer heat, like cars had never been invented. Angie took a moment to consider what she had done, what she was still doing. This was a little crazy stalker, a little more dangerous than usual. Was she dangerous? She had locked her purse in the car. The gun was still unloaded. Something had told her to leave the clip out, make herself walk through those extra steps, jam in the clip, pull back the slide, load a bullet into the chamber, curl her finger around the trigger, before she did something that she couldn't get out of. Angie looked down at her foot. The toes were up, heel down, about to take a step. She rocked back and forth. Leave? Go? Stay here until someone woke up?
He drinks hot chocolate in the morning, Sarah had written to Tessa. It's like kissing a Hershey bar when I wake up.
The iPad was in Angie's trunk, too. She had told herself on the drive over that she was going to hand over the movie to Will. His golden ticket back into the Marcus Rippey rape charge. He would be ecstatic. So why had Angie left the iPad locked in her trunk if the plan was to give it to Will? She looked down at her foot, toes still raised, undecided. In all honesty, Angie never knew exactly what she wanted to give Will. A good time? A hard time? A bad time when Sarah came into the kitchen, expecting to suck chocolate off his lips, and found Angie instead. She smiled at the thought. The clock on the stove read 5 in the morning. Will would wake up for his run in half an hour. He had an internal alarm that you couldn't silence no matter what you did to entice him into staying in bed. Angie's toes pressed to the floor. Her heel raised up. Her toes went down again. She was walking. She was in the dining room. She was in the living room. She was in the bathroom. She was in the hall. She was standing outside Will's bedroom. The door was cracked open. Will was on his back. His eyes were closed. A sliver of light played across his face. His shirt was off. He never slept with his shirt off. He was ashamed of the scars, the burns, the damage. Apparently, that had changed. The reason why was between his legs. Long auburn hair, milky white skin. Sarah was propped up on her elbow. She was using her hand with her mouth. It was her other hand that Angie couldn't stop looking at. Will's fingers were laced through Sarah's, not gripping the back of her head, not forcing her to go deeper. He was holding her fucking hand. Angie pressed her fist to her mouth. She wanted to scream. She was going to scream. She turned around, forcing herself into an unnatural silence. She was in the living room, the kitchen, the backyard, the driveway, her car. It wasn't until she was locked inside her car that she let it out. Angie opened her mouth and screamed as loud as she could. She yelled so long that she tasted blood in her mouth. She banged her fists on the steering wheel. She was crying, aching so bad that every bone in her body felt charred with rage. She got out of the car. She opened the trunk. She grabbed her purse. She found her gun. The clip was out. She shoved it back in. She started to pull back on the slide to put a bullet into the chamber, but her hands were too slick with sweat. She looked at the gun. The Glock had been a gift to herself when she got the job with Kip. She should have cleaned it better. The metal looked dry. Will used to oil her gun for her. He used to make sure her car had enough gas, that her transmission wasn't leaking like a sieve, that she had enough money in her bank account, that she wasn't out there in the world alone. He was doing those things for Sarah now. Angie got back into her car. She tossed the gun onto the dashboard. This wasn't right. She was trying to do good, to help Joe, to help Will with his case against Marcus Rippey, to risk her fucking life to save her daughter. This was the thanks she got? She could already have a target on her back. Dale was clearly suspicious. He knew more than he was letting on. Angie thought she was playing them, but maybe they were playing her. Or Joe could be the weak link. Fuck not showing up outside Rippy's house tomorrow night. Joe could have already told Reuben what was going on. Chain reaction. Reuben would tell Kip, Kip would tap Laszlo, and Angie would have a knife sticking out of her chest by the time Joe bonded out of jail. Let Will identify her body. Let him see the knife in her heart. Let him experience the horror that came from realizing he had failed her just like every other time he had let her down. Let him hold her lifeless, bloody hand while he cried. And let that cunt, Sarah Linton, see all of it. Angie found a notebook in her purse, clicked her pen, started writing in big, capital letters, "You fucking piece of..." Angie stared at the words. The pen had torn through the paper. Her heart was pounding so hard that she felt it pushing into her throat. She tore the page out of the notebook. She tried to regulate her breathing, to stop her hand from shaking, to calm the hell down. This had to be done right. She couldn't hurt Will with her words if she didn't sharpen her tongue with a razor. Angie pressed the pen to the blank sheet of paper. Cursive. Crooked, sloping lines. Not for Will, but for Sarah. Hey, baby. If someone is reading this to you, then I am dead. She filled the page front and back. She felt like a dam had broken inside of her. 30 years of having his back. Taking care of his problems, comforting him. Letting him fuck her. Fucking him back. Will might not find the letter soon, but he would find it eventually. Either Angie would be dead, or Sarah would nag him into finally making a break. Will would go to the bank. He would find Angie's post office box. And instead of finding a way to track her down, he would find this letter. "Fuck you," Angie mumbled. "Fuck you, and fuck your girlfriend, and fuck her sister, and her fucking family, and her fucking..." She heard a door close. Will stood on his front porch. He was dressed in his running gear. He stretched up his arms, leaned one way, then the other. His 5:30 run. One thing that would never change. Angie waited for him to see her car, but instead of looking out into the street, he knelt down on the front walk and plucked a flower from the garden. He went back into the house. Almost a full minute passed before he returned to the porch, hands empty, smile on his face. Angie could take care of his silly grin. She got out of her car. She stared at him, waiting for him to see her. At first he didn't. He stretched his legs. He checked the water bottle that fit into the small of his back. He retied his shoes. Finally, he looked up. His mouth gaped open. Angie glared at him. Her fingernails itched to claw out his eyes. She wanted to kick him in the face. He said, "Angie?" She got into the car. She slammed the door closed. She cranked the engine. She pulled away from the curb. "Wait," Will called. He was running after her, arms pumping, muscles straining. "Angie!" She could see him in a rearview mirror, getting closer. Still screaming her name, Angie slammed on the brakes. She grabbed the gun off her dash. She got out of the car and pointed the weapon at his head. Will's hand shot into the air. He was 15 feet away. Close enough to catch up to her. Close enough to take a bullet to the heart. He said, "I just want to talk to you." Angie's finger was resting just above the trigger. Then it was not. She felt the safety lever under the pad of her finger. Then the trigger. And then she pulled back hard. Click. Will flinched. The bullet didn't come. Dry fire. The chamber was empty. Angie's hands had been too slick to pull back on the slide. Will said, "Let's go somewhere and talk." She stared at her husband. Everything was so familiar, but different. The lean cut of his legs. The tight abdomen under his t-shirt. The long sleeves that covered the scar on his arm. The mouth that had kissed her. The hands that had touched her. That touched Sarah now. that held her fucking hand. She said,
"You've changed."
Will didn't deny it.
"I need to talk to you."
"There's nothing to say," she told him. "I don't even recognize you anymore." He held out his arms.
"This is what I look like when I'm in love."
Angie felt the cold metal of the gun against her leg. The air had left her body. Acid ripped apart her stomach. Pull the slide, load the bullet into the chamber, press the trigger, make the problem disappear. Make Sarah a widow again. Erase the last 30 years because they didn't matter. They never mattered, at least they didn't to Will. Angie got back into the car. The gun went back onto the dash. She pressed the gas all the way to the floor. Her body hurt. Her soul ached. She felt like Will had beaten her. She wished that he had. Bloodied her mouth. Bruised her eyes shut. Kicked her bones to pieces. Railed against her, screamed at her, seethed with rage. Anything that would prove that he still loved her. Sunday, 11:49 p.m. Angie fired up a joint. The moon was full overhead, almost like a spotlight. She looked in her rearview mirror. Clear. It wasn't yet time for Joe to leave the party. They had settled on midnight because it seemed like as good a time as any. LaDonna's party had started at 9. No one who mattered showed up until 10. 2 hours to mingle. 2 hours for Joe to extract herself from Reuben. Or to take the coward's way out and stay with her husband. Midnight. Joe would either turn into a pumpkin, or she would turn into Angie's daughter. Angie blew on the tip of the joint. She honestly had no idea what Joe would do. The stark truth was that she did not know Joe Figueroa. Angie was here because she had made a promise to herself that she would see this through. What happened next was up to Joe. The only certain outcome was that Angie was going to leave town either way. She looked down at the yellow plastic ring on her finger. The sunflower leaves had been crushed in her purse. All of her purses. Angie changed out her bag every other day, but she always transferred the ring because...
Why?
Because it meant something? A child's toy, bought from a bubblegum machine to signify a relationship that had begun almost 30 years before? Angie always pretended that she didn't remember that first time with Will. Mrs. Flanagan's stuffy basement. Mouse shit on the floor. The stained, futon mattress. The smell of spunk. He had been so vulnerable. Too vulnerable. Like fear, vulnerability was contagious. That day, Will had been distraught. But Angie was the one who felt inconsolable. She had shown him a side of herself that no one else had seen before, or since. She had told him about her mother's pimp. She had told him about what came after. Will had never looked at Angie the same way again. He took on the job of savior, of superhero. He risked his life to protect her. He constantly bailed her out of trouble. He gave her money. He gave her safety. What did he want in return? Nothing that Angie could see. This was not the kind of transaction she could live with. In many ways, it would have been better if Will had held it over her head or punished her. A feeling of pity was his only reward. Will never asked her for the things that he knew other men had paid for. He clearly wanted it. He wasn't a saint. But there was too much knowledge. Too much of a clear-eyed understanding of the pain that had bonded them together in that dank, lonely basement. Angie was 10 years old when Deirdre Pulaski stuck a needle in her own arm and took a 3-decades-long nap. For weeks, Angie sat beside the woman's comatose body and watched the soap operas and slept and bathed Deirdre and combed her hair. There was a roll of cash in a Sanka jar behind the radiator. Angie used the money for pizza and junk food. The cash ran out before Angie could. Deirdre's pimp came knocking on her door, looking for his piece. Angie told him there was nothing left. So he took a piece of her instead. Her mouth, her hands, not her body. Dale Harding knew better than to shit where another man would pay to eat. Everyone always said Dale was a bad cop. No one ever figured out how bad. They thought it was booze and gambling. They didn't know that he had a stable of underage girls supplementing his paycheck from the city. That he took pictures. That he sold the pictures to other men. That he sold the girls. That he used the girls for himself. He had tricked out Delilah, his own daughter. He had tricked out Deirdre, his own sister. He had tricked out Angie, his own niece. 34 years ago, Dale was the one who knocked at the door. Angie's uncle. Her savior. Her pimp. This was how Angie knew about the bricks of cash Dale kept under the spare tire in his trunk. Escape money, he always called it. For the time when the detectives he was working with turned their detecting his way. They never figured him out. And meanwhile, Dale had earned and gambled away fortunes. There were always more abandoned girls to exploit. There was always more cash to be made. And there was always Angie on the periphery, waiting for him to notice her. He was the closest thing to a father that she had ever had. Every home the state placed her in, no matter how good or bad, Angie always found a way back to Dale. She became a cop for him. She took care of his problems. She looked after Delilah when, most of the time, all she could think about was wrapping a bag around the girl's head and watching her suffocate. Will had no idea that a cop had pimped Angie out. He was as good as Dale Harding was bad. Will did things the right way. He followed the rules. But he also had that same feral animal side to him that Angie did. Will could dress in a suit and keep his hair cut over his collar, but she saw through the disguise. She knew how to push that button that brought out the beast. Over the years, Angie had toyed with telling him about Dale. There was a time when Will would have tracked Dale down, put a bullet in his gut if he found out what the man had done to Angie. She wondered what he would do if he found out now. Probably talk to Sarah. Discuss how tragic Angie's life was. Then they'd go out to dinner. Then they would go home and make love. That's what bothered Angie the most. Not the blowjob, not even the hand-holding, but the ease between them. The sensation had permeated the room. Happiness, contentment, love. Angie couldn't remember ever having that with Will. She should let him go, give him permission to have the normalcy that he had yearned for his entire life. Unfortunately, Angie never did the right thing when she felt wounded. Her inclination was to lash out. Her inclination was to keep hurting Will until he finally hurt her back. Angie stubbed out the joint in the ashtray. Everything she hated about Joe was everything that was inside of Angie. She looked at her watch. 11:52. The clock felt like it was moving backward. Angie got out of her car. The sweltering heat almost pushed her back inside. The temperature hadn't dropped with the sun. Her thin cotton shift was little more than a handkerchief, but she was still sweating. She leaned against the trunk. The metal was too hot. Angie walked down the side of the road, careful not to go too far. Her nerves were rattled. She had tapered off the Vicodin too quickly. She was concerned about Joe. She was scared of Laszlo. She was terrified of Dale. She was worried that her plan to neutralize Kip Kilpatrick would come back to bite her in the ass. Dale always said you had to use an axe, not a hammer. Angie figured She might as well use it to cut off the head of a snake. A woman screamed. Angie's head jerked toward the street, toward the Rippies' driveway, toward the sound of a woman begging for help.
Please! Joe screamed. No!
Angie popped open her trunk. She didn't take her gun. She found the tire iron. She kicked off her heels. She ran down the street, arms pumping, neck straining, the same as Will when he had chased her car yesterday morning.
Help! Joe screamed. Please!
Angie rounded the corner to the driveway. The gates were open. The house glowed with lights. Music thumped. There was no security guard. No one was watching the cameras.
Please!
Joe begged.
Help me!
Reuben Figueroa was dragging his wife by the hair. Joe's bare feet scraped across the grass. He was taking her to the woods, away from the house. He wanted to have some privacy.
Help!
Angie didn't give him a warning. She didn't tell him to stop. She held the tire iron over her head as she ran toward him. By the time Reuben realized she was there, Angie was swinging the heavy metal bar at his head. She felt the iron shudder in her hand, vibrate down her arm and into her shoulder. Reuben dropped Joe. His mouth was open, his eyes rolled back in his head. He fell to the ground, unconscious. Angie raised the iron again, this time aiming for his knee, the one with the brace, the one he'd had surgery on. Time was moving slow enough for her to register the fact that the best orthopedist in the world had given him 5 more years of playing basketball, and with one swing of her arm, Angie was going to take that away.
No! Joe stopped Angie's hand. Not his knee! Not his knee!
Angie struggled, trying to free her arm to take that final swing.
Please! Joe begged. Don't! Please!
Angie looked at the tire iron. She saw her daughter's hand gripping her own, the first time Joe had ever touched her.
Let's go, Joe said. Let's just go.
She was begging. Her eyes were wild. Blood poured from her nose and mouth. She looked like she didn't know who she was more afraid of, Angie or her husband. Angie forced the muscles in her arm to relax. She jogged down the driveway, ran down the street. Her shoes were still in the road. Angie scooped them up as she walked by. She was throwing the tire iron in the trunk when Joe caught up with her.
I need him to play, she said. His next contract.
Get in the car. Angie threw her shoes into the back seat. She didn't want to hear excuses. Even as Joe left, she was planning her way back. The engine was already running. Angie strapped on her seatbelt. Joe got into the car. Angie pulled away before she could close the door.
He saw me, Joe said. I was trying to...
It doesn't matter. Reuben had recognized Angie. She had seen it in his eyes. He knew she worked for Kip. He knew that she was his fixer. And now he knew that Angie had taken his wife. Joe reached for her seatbelt. The buckle clicked. She stared ahead at the road.
Do you think he's dead?
He passed out. Angie looked at her watch. How long before Reuben came to? How long before he called Kip and Laszlo and Dale?
What have I done?
Joe mumbled. It was sinking in now, the price she would pay for her disobedience, the cost of returning to her life.
We have to stop. We can't do this.
Angie told her, I've got the video.
What?
I have the video of Marcus and Reuben raping that girl.
How?
Joe didn't wait for an explanation.
You can't use it. They'll go to jail. LaDonna...
I'm not afraid of LaDonna.
You damn well should be.
Angie swerved into a parking lot. She pulled into a space beside a black Ford Fusion. Here's the key. Angie dropped the sun visor and let the key fall into Joe's lap. Go to the motel. Wait for me.
We can't do this, Joe said. The video, they'll kill me. They'll kill you.
Don't you think I know that? Angie's fists were clenched. She was overwhelmed with a desire to punch some sense into her child. It's over, sweetheart. This is the end of the line. There's no going back to Reuben. There's no going back to anything.
I can't
get out. Angie leaned over and pushed open the door. She fought with the seatbelt buckle. Get out of my car.
No! Joe clawed at Angie's hands. He'll find me! You don't understand!
She scanned Angie's face, looking for compassion. When she didn't find it, her face contorted in agony. She covered her eyes with her hands. Sobs came out of her mouth.
Please don't make me!
Angie watched her daughter cry. The girl's thin shoulders were shaking. Her hands trembled. The act might be heartbreaking to someone who actually had a heart. Angie said, "Cut the shit. I'm not buying it." Joe looked up at her. There were no tears in her eyes, just hatred. "You can't make me do anything." "Was he sweet to you?" Angie asked, because that was the only thing that made sense. "You got out of jail, and instead of beating you, he said everything was going to be okay, that it was going to be different from now on." Joe's nostrils flared. Angie had hit the mark. "Is that how he roped you back in? Oh, baby, I love you. I'll take care of you. I'll never let you go. I'll never abandon you like your mama did." "Don't you throw my mama back in my face." Angie grabbed Joe's chin and jerked her head around. "Listen up, you dumb bitch. Reuben saw me. He knows that I'm helping you. You think your mama didn't give a shit about you? That's not even half of what I'm feeling right now." Joe's tears were real now. Angie tightened her grip on the girl's face. "You're going to get in that car, and you're going to drive to the motel, and I'm going to pick up your son, and we are both going to get the hell out of here. Do you understand me?" Joe nodded. Angie pushed the girl's face away. "Give me your phone."
"I dropped it when..."
Angie patted her down. She found the iPhone tucked into Joe's bra. "Did you tell your mother that I'm going to pick up Anthony?" Joe nodded again. "If you're lying to me..." Angie stopped, because there was nothing to do if Joe was lying. "Get out of the car." Joe was too afraid to move.
"He'll find me. He'll find us."
Angie grabbed the front of her dress and slammed her against the seat. "You do this right now, or I will cut your son into little pieces and mail him back to you."
"Reuben will give you whatever you want."
Her voice was a shriek.
"He'll pay whatever..."
"Anthony will pay." Tears streamed down Joe's face. She had realized that she was out of options. Slowly, she nodded, just like Angie knew she would. Women like Joe only ever responded to threats. Angie said, "Don't stop to use a payphone. Don't go back to Rippy's. Get in the car. Drive to the motel. Wait for me." Joe got out of the car. She opened the door to the rental. Angie waited for her to drive off, to make sure she went down Piedmont instead of back toward Tuxedo Drive. Angie rolled down the window. She tossed Joe's iPhone onto the pavement. She resisted the urge to get out of the car and stomp it into the ground. "I knew it," she mumbled to herself. She had known that her daughter was weak. She had known that Joe would try to back down. Angie ran over the phone with her car three times before she took a left out of the parking lot. She headed toward Peachtree. Joe's mother lived in a fancy condo near Jesus Junction, paid for by Reuben Figueroa. Angie had to be calm when the old woman opened the door. And she had to hurry, because she had no idea whether or not Reuben had regained consciousness. The first place he would look for Joe was at her mother's. Angie checked her reflection in the mirror. Her hair was a mess. Her eyeliner was smudged. She used her finger to straighten the line. She couldn't look dangerous when Joe's mother opened the door. Was she dangerous? Hell yes, she was dangerous. Angie's cell phone rang. The The noise filled the car. She reached around to the back seat. She blindly fished her phone from her purse. Too late. The ringing had stopped. She looked at the screen. Missed call from Harding Dale. Shit. She'd wasted too much time in the car with Joe. 10 minutes? 15? Reuben was awake. Kip had been notified. Laszlo was on the hunt. Dale thought he could talk her in. That she was still a 10-year-old girl he could trick with candy while he rammed his cock up her ass. Angie's phone made a whistling sound. Dale had sent a text. She swiped her thumb. A photograph loaded. Anthony. Eyes wide. Back pressed up against a blank wall. The long, sharp blade of a hunting knife pressed to his neck. The word underneath read, Grandson. Angie gasped. She had to pull over. Her heart had stopped beating. Her blood ran cold. Joe's child. Her grandchild. What had she done? Why was this happening? Another whistle, another text, another photo. Angie's hands were shaking so hard she could barely hold the phone. Joe. A hand around her neck. Her back to the window of a car door, her mouth open, screaming. Dale's text read, Daughter. Acid filled Angie's throat. Shot up into the back of her nose, she pushed open the door, her mouth opened. A stream of bile splattered against the pavement. Her stomach turned inside out. She tasted blood and venom. What had she done? What could she do to stop this? She sat back up. She wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. Think, she told herself. Think. Dale had taken Joe. He had taken Anthony, or had someone else do it for him. He had sent Angie two photos, proof of life. The backgrounds were different. Joe was in a car. Anthony was against a painted wall. This was coordinated. Planned, because Dale was always two steps ahead of Angie. He had looked into Joe. He had looked into Angie. He had obviously taken a great deal of time to build the web she now found herself trapped in. She clicked on her phone. She could already guess the answer, but she still texted the question, What do you want? Dale responded immediately, iPad. Dale had never trusted Angie, not even with the little things. He must have taken the pieces of the smashed iPad to Sam Vera for examination. Sam had discovered it was not the clone. Dale had asked himself why Angie would go to the trouble of swapping them out. And then he had realized that a video Marcus Rippey wanted to get rid of was worth a hell of a lot more than $250,000 in an escrow account. Nothing had changed since Angie was a child. She thought she was in control, but all the while, Dale was pulling her strings. Her phone whistled again. Dale had written, Nightclub. Now. Monday, 1:08 a.m. Dale's Kia was already parked in front of the club. Delilah leaned against the hood, smoking a cigarette. Angie was out of her car before it came to a full stop. The asphalt was hot against her bare feet. She raised her arm. The gun was in her hand. She pointed it at Delilah and pulled the trigger. There was a bullet in the chamber this time. Fuck! Delilah doubled over, clutching her leg, blood squeezed out between her fingers. You fucking bitch! Angie struggled against the need to pull the trigger again. Where's Joe?
Fuck you! Delilah screamed. She's fucking dead if you don't do what you're supposed to do!
Where is she? Angie repeated.
You mean your daughter?
Dale struggled to get out of the car. In the moonlight, his face looked almost completely white. There were flecks of dried skin around his mouth. His eyes were golden. He leaned heavily on the car. He had a revolver pointed at her across the roof.
Kill her! Delilah screamed. Blow her fucking brains out!
It's just a flesh wound.
Dale said. He was out of breath from getting out of the car. His skin was shiny, but not with sweat.